If you like what you're hearing, why not try a StephCast subscription? Only $4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance. Go to stephaniemiller.com to find out how.
E.J. Dionne is one of my personal favorites on the TV machine. He wrote a book with Joanne Reed, my other, she's my shero. Mm-hmm. The book is entitled "We Are the Change We Speak: The Speeches of Barack Obama." Remember, like a week ago or so. Remember when we had a real president mm-hmm. that speak and did stuff that was constitutional. All right, that's not important now. Good morning, E.J.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me. And well, I love Joy, too.
I don't know. I could not make it without her show. The good thing, EJ, that we keep saying about what we're seeing this weekend and last weekend is at least we're not all crazy. We're like going...
You know, there are a number of good things in the midst of all this madness. And let's just say out front, this de facto Muslim ban, which is what it is capricious and counterproductive and cruel. But I think we should be very happy at how many Americans all across the country, and most of them not Muslims, have been demonstrating, crying out against this, providing legal help at airports, that this struck so many Americans as, I don't like using the term, but un-American,
mm-hmm.
And unnecessary, and, in truth, this move will make us less safe. What does this do to our soldiers in Iraq? Yep. Suddenly Iraqis discover they can't come to the United States. I mean, there are all kinds of implications. So I think the fact that Americans are not taking any of this lying down, it goes back to the day after he was inaugurated at the Women's March. That was an extraordinary, women's marches all over the country. So we're not lying back and accepting the unacceptable, and that's a huge deal.
Well, and EJ, I think the huge deal, too, is that thank God the entire world sees this, and sees that a lot of us, millions and millions of us, feel the same way they do about this. And it presents a different face to the world, certainly, right?
Right, and we forget at our peril that Hillary Clinton got 2.9 million more votes than Donald Trump. Collectively.
Don't bring that up. He's sensitive.
Right, exactly. I want him to tweet again.
Because he might do something irrational.
Combined opponents got 10 million more votes than Donald Trump. And here's my favorite statistic from the exit poll. On Election Day, 60% of Americans had an unfavorable view of Donald Trump. 15% of them voted for him anyway. That means that 9% of the whole electorate really didn't like Donald Trump, but voted for him, maybe because they didn't like Hillary Clinton, or for whatever reasons. Those are not Trump supporters. So I think it's very important, not only for progressives, but for everybody to realize his real base of support in the country is at most around 35%. And that gives people who want to call this out in the center as well as the left a lot of room to move and a lot of Americans to talk to.
Well, yeah, I mean, exactly. And I was saying that, I've never seen this. I know you haven't either. A week into this, there's a great piece in the HuffPost this morning, the inevitability of impeachment. I mean, it's hard to even, I don't even know. I know you're not a lawyer either, E.J. Like this morning, we're walking around going, how is this possible? We're in a constitutional crisis, aren't we? I mean, they're defying a court order, the Trump White House.
I wish I could remember who sent it out, but somebody sent a tweet yesterday saying it took Nixon years to create a constitutional crisis. Mm. Trump did it in 10 days. And I've actually been saying it's unfair to Nixon to compare him to Trump when you look at his overreach, his disorganization. I mean, put aside the outrageousness of the Muslim ban, the way in which it was carried out was so profoundly incompetent. And while we can take some comfort from incompetence in executing, a bad policy, the fact is that incompetence can also magnify the negative results of the bad policies. And, I was on Joy's show on Saturday, and two people, at the end of her show, she has a segment, who won the week. And I said two people. One were whistleblowers, where we are seeing both within the government and even at that meeting of House Republicans on health care, where somebody leaked a tape of their own doubts about what they were doing about Obamacare.
Yeah.
That was one winner. But the other was the 25th Amendment, where the cabinet would put aside the sitting president for being not in a shape to do the job. Now, that's not going to happen. anytime soon, but I have never in my entire life heard so many people talking about the 25th Amendment in the first week of someone's presidency, and I think that's a measure of A, simply the size of opposition to Trump, but B, the fact that a lot of these actions are not the actions of someone who has it all under control. It's a very odd set of reactions Trump has had to a lot of things.
Well, yeah, no, exactly. That's what I'm hearing, too, is that a lot of Republicans privately are discussing his mental state, shall we say. I mean, if you watch that ABC interview, you're just like, he's just insane. I mean, and Republicans in these closed-door meetings when he's going on and on about his inauguration crowd and his, you know, the voter fraud, they're just, I think Republicans at this point aren't sure what to do about this.
No, but I think what's troubling, first of all, on the Muslim ban, fortunately, a little bit of the dam broke. You did have Republicans beyond John McCain and Lindsey Graham who said this is a bad idea. But you've had a lot of reluctance in the leadership to call him out, particularly Paul Ryan and
right.
Mitch McConnell. And you have a sense that they are so eager to pass big tax cuts and big budget cuts that they don't want to disturb the status quo. And again, I want to be clear. I'm not sort of suggesting we implement the 25th Amendment. I just think the fact that even got into people's heads should tell us something about the first 10 days.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think part of the, you know, where I wonder is what's going to happen with Republicans is they're not for a lot of the stuff that he's, you know, they're going to come to loggerheads with him on whether it's trade war or fiscal conservatism, right?
Right. Or, you know, this new configuration of his National Security Council. It doesn't strike me as particularly liberal to say, gee, why would you keep the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff off, not make them regular participants? Why would you keep the head of intelligence off, but put Steve Bannon in? There are plenty of Republicans out there and conservatives who say, what is he doing to the National Security Council, and what is this going to do to our foreign policy? So that he has taken a series of moves that are disturbing a lot of people. What I have noticed, and maybe I'm curious if you've seen the same, the Republicans who are not in Congress have been much more willing to speak out, and conservatives who are not in Congress have been much more willing to speak out. And I still think there is an intimidation factor where Republican incumbents are worried about the role of Trump voters in the Republican electorate. And I have a theory, which I want to sort of look at the data on in about a month, that there are Republicans who probably don't call themselves Republican anymore because they are disturbed by what Trump is doing. But that will only shrink the Republican primary electorate even more to Trump loyalists, which paradoxically will increase the pressure on Republicans to stay in line.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I mean, to be a week in and this president is at all out war with both the media and our intelligence agencies, essentially, I don't know where we're going.
The National Socialist Conference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, go ahead, EJ. Sorry.
No, I think that, you know, I've been, alas, around a long time. I mean, there's some benefits to that. But, you know, and I, in my life, I've never seen something like this or felt something like this. I actually recently checked my own reaction against the column I wrote when George W. Bush took over. And people are old enough to remember, no, I was very, very, very upset about what happened in Florida and what the Supreme Court did. I still am.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten over it. But I read what I was writing about George Bush, and I clearly wasn't on his side. But I did not feel this way about Bush because it was very clear that even though I thought his policies were wrong, there were some small-D Democratic impulses there. And if you looked at his inaugural address, it was a welcoming address to people who disagreed with him. I think one of the really striking things about Trump is that he has made no efforts at all to reassure the people, you know, and I'm not just talking about people who will be implacably opposed to him no matter what. I'm talking about a lot of people who weren't for him but would actually like to be reassured that the person in charge of the country is capable of a bit more moderation, and he hasn't shown that at all.
Yeah, yeah, or is just sane. You know, and to get to your book, I mean, boy, talk about, I don't think we've ever had a whiplash like this between going from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. I mean, that must have struck you even more, you know, putting together this whole book of his speeches, right?
Right. Well, right before the book came out, I wrote a column where I quoted the great political philosopher Joni Mitchell, who said, "You don't know what you got till it's gone." And I think one of the most striking things about Trump is how much Obama nostalgia he is going to create. Because, you know, there were some people who thought Obama was too cautious, or there were some people who wanted him to speak out more loudly at all kinds of things. But when you compare his, again, I would use the term fundamental moderation, both in tone and in substance, to what we're getting from Trump, I think there are a lot of people who may even have been critics of President Obama who say, my God, that guy sure looks more like what we expect from a president. But the other side of it, the progressive side of Obama, I think is sort of clear in his vision of history versus Donald Trump's. The slogan of Donald Trump was "Make America Great Again," the implication being that American greatness was in our past.
Yeah.
And Obama, and there are a number of speeches we include. I think my favorite is the Selma speech, the speech commemorating the Selma March. Obama was always saying, no, we continually perfect ourselves. I love it that Obama used the word perfect more as a verb than as an adjective.
Right.
He never pretended we were perfect, but he argued that the genius of America is we keep trying to perfect ourselves and fix what's wrong.
EJ, I can't, first of all, I know I can't even imagine what President Obama was thinking as he sat there for that horrible inaugural address about what a hellscape he had created, apparently, and then what he thinks in this last week.
Well, I think Obama in his farewell address, which, by the way, is included in the new edition of our book, our publisher would want me to say that. They went back, people, bless them, bought the book, and so they had to do a new printing, and they included the farewell address in it. I think there was a whole section in that address where Obama was effectively saying, almost directly saying, that he doesn't, you know, he'd prefer to have a quiet ex-presidency write books and think, and, you know, he wanted to do some political things like, you know, recruit new Democrats, but he didn't necessarily want to come out there hard. But he also said that if fundamental American values come under question, you know, come into doubt, if actions happen that threaten our liberties, he will come and speak out.
He must be going, right, I thought I'd get at least a week vacation, but oh boy.
Right, and I think Trump has given him a great big opening to intervene right away, because he keeps citing the fact that Obama listed the countries Trump has banned people from as dangerous. But none of that means Obama believes in this policy. Obama doesn't believe in this policy.
No, don't you? EJ, I'm glad you said that, because I thought this is what's one of the things driving me insane, is they were so disrespectful to President Obama. For, you know, first and foremost, Donald Trump and the whole birther thing. And now he's like their binky. You know, they're like, oh, well, this is the countries that Obama said. Or, oh, why won't people listen to President Obama about a peaceful transition? What, you know what I mean? Now they're trying to cite him as daddy, right? Like,
right. No, it's very odd. And that's why I think my strong hunch is that he, at some point, and maybe sooner than we thought, he is going to speak out. I got to say, another pet peeve that I've developed in the last week is that the Republicans talked constantly. Sorry, that's our wonderful dog here. I'm doing this for a moment.
Oh, good. Mine's doing it, too. Okay. They're having a conversation as well. All right, go ahead.
Yes. That the dog distracted me. Oh, what I was going to say is that the Republicans attacked Obama for using executive orders, and this whole Trump presidency for the first 10 days has been a president by executive order.
Yeah.
And I'd like
exactly.
to hear some Republicans suggest that they be consistent. And before any Republican comes back and says, well, you didn't speak out against the Obama executive orders, none of them had the implications or were as broad as these, particularly
the one
he did this weekend. And none of them had the effect of being so cruel to so many people.
That's right.
You know, people who work for American companies, who have green cards, who went through all the hoops. Some of them were being detained, and now it's not even clear what their policy is toward green card holders. And that's just one of many groups You know, two Iraqis who helped American troops while they were there at the risk of their own lives were kept out of the country.
I know.
How can that be patriotic?
I know. I think what your dog was saying is that America has fallen down the well again, and we are in a constitutional crisis.
And anyway, Ranger Rick,
the book is, if you want to reminisce about when we had a real president, We Are the Change We Seek, The Speeches of Barack Obama by E.J. Dionne and Joy Reid. E.J., always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
A great joy to be with you. Thank
All right.
you.
All right. Thank you, E.J. There he goes. E.J. Dionne.
It's like we've jumped from Adlai Stevenson to Adolf Hitler.
That's quite a jump.